Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value displays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 488. Got a special friend rejoining me to talk a little fab recap from the week, to talk about some main event action, maybe some poker. I don't know. He's a busy man. He's doing all kinds of fun stuff. You can find golf. His work and golf. Yeah, we do it all. We can find him over at RotoWire. I'll let him plug his poker blog. And, of course, he's on Twitter at Ryan Roof. Ryan, how we doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Bubba. Appreciate it. You know, not as handsome as Toby or as vocally gifted. Did a nice little Dido rendition last week, but gonna do my best here.
No, I appreciate it. It's always fun finding the fill-ins. I always give Toby a hard time. He lives the dream. He's just on vacation 24/7. It feels like that's what I tell him. But yeah, he'll be back next week. But it's good to have you on the show because we can talk some fab. And we'll start things off before we get into baseball. I want you to plug your poker work because. It's fun, and this might sound cheesy to some, but like I golf a lot. I know you golf as well. That's kind of my vice to get away from everything, go golf. You had a passion for poker. You even had a blog for it. You know, life gets in the way. You kind of start doing some other things, but you found yourself back at the table recently and you blogged about it. So I want to let everybody know where they can find that and kind of what's your poker background or inspiration or whatever floats your boat here.
Yeah. Well, before I had kids, I was playing online poker, like as a job.
Nice.
You know, professionally, quote unquote. Then I had kids and was like, I should probably get something a little bit more stable. So, but I was pretty good at poker, qualified for the World Series of Poker main event through pokerroom.com back in 2005. Played a poker cruise for a $250,000 poker sponsorship back in 2006, bubble bat tournament. All of that can be found in my poker blog. It's Roofbert Poker. blogspot.com. Just started getting back into it and just following the World Series of Poker going on in Las Vegas right now. Daniel Negreanu is a poker pro who does daily World Series of Poker vlogs, so I watch those and just, you know, reminds me of how much I love the game. And you know, it was a big part of my life for a long time before you know, the law banned poker in the United States, online poker. So getting back into it, and maybe it'll turn into something a little bit more serious, you know, when I'm not playing fantasy baseball.
That's fun. That's great. Because Sammy Reed, I know he was talking with you on Twitter. I know Sammy very well. He basically, I don't know if he wants to say he's pro, he's at least semi-pro. He plays a ton, plays a lot, especially during like COVID when they reopened the card halls around here. He was playing a lot. Like that was kind of a job for him. So he's very much into it. He has a podcast as well. So
Read Him and Weep. His podcast is great. I've listened to it before. It's awesome.
Sammy's a great dude. There's a ton of former poker players that play either DFS or fantasy because there's a lot of similar strategy behind it, like game theory behind a lot of it. So it makes a lot of sense when you delve into it. I used to play poker for fun. I'd like to play it more, maybe one of these days. It would be fun. Like, you guys would clean up with me because I played at FPAS this last year. There's always the poker nights, usually on Friday night, sometimes both nights. And I think I made it out of a table of like 16 to like 13th place. So it was fun, but it's also late at night. Drinks have been had, little different situations. So,
yeah.
yeah, it's always a good time and looking forward to seeing where that goes for you. Cool. You also have another blog, but it's on RotoWire. And this is you keeping us posted on your first main event, one that you won using game theory in a DFS type format to get your entry into, which is kind of funny because you got an entry into the World Series of Poker main event as well by winning like a qualifier in theory. So how is the main event going for you? This is your third installment of your RotoWire article that people can read for free if you go to rotowire.com. And check out. It's fun to see because I'll let you have the floor here in a second. But for someone that plays the game like I do, it's fun to see different people's successes and struggles with it and talk about it. So how's it going for you?
And it's a roller coaster. I did not realize how difficult the NFBC main event would be. I mean, just my league is so tough. So basically every 6 or 7 weeks, I update everyone on that free article through RotoWire. Just recapping my stats and standings for each scoring period. I go into fab decisions and results, lessons learned. So, I just posted that piece a couple of days ago. It's free. And just really chronicling my journey through the main event. You know, hopefully it will inspire others to try to qualify or buy in who haven't played it before. It's really, I'm learning so much. I've played fantasy baseball now for so long, but now I'm just like, deer in headlights in this contest, man, is it's no joke.
Yeah, no, it's a different animal. Like Toby talks about it a lot, and it's like Rob DiPietro, you know quite well. Many guys talk about it. It's a whole different beast. It's wild. It's a lot of money to get into unless you like yourself, you qualifier like Ryan did last week. Ryan Bloomfield, $50 gets you a $1,750 ticket. Basically, I think that's what it's at now. It probably goes up even more. And it's crazy. 15 team leagues, overall competitions. The waiver wires aren't deep. That's why I tell people like I like the 12s because I like to have fun and realize I can still add guys. you can't really do that in a 15. So, what are you finding? You said it's a roller coaster, which is true. What are you finding to be the most difficult part? Is it just the waiver wire period, or what is it that's been your hardest part getting through this?
Yeah, it's really that's part of it. My league is filled with heavy hitters. I have Vlad Sedler, Chris Liss, Larry Schechter, Zach Waxman's in my league. I mean, it's just stacked. And, going through fab each week takes me a long time because, you know, there's 30 some pickups every week in this league. So if you're trying to pick up somebody or you need to have coverage at certain positions, your lists need to be pretty deep. So I learned a pretty important lesson from this past, 6 weeks of just fab. I had an opportunity. It was the week when Michael Harris and John Birdie, Oscar Gonzalez were available. And I had Harold Ramirez and Jose Siri listed higher in my conditional bids above all those guys. And it's just like, I'm just looking back like, man, just spend a little bit more time like on your deep conditional bid lists. I kind of dread that 10 p.m. Eastern fab because it's like especially when I really want somebody, because there's been a few weeks where I've just really wanted someone and just, you know, have been like $10 short or something like that. And it's just like so frustrating. But so it's a little bit humbling, but it's fab's pretty tough. Pitching for me has been pretty easy this year because I haven't really had to make a lot of pitching moves. My pitchers have remained relatively healthy, but on the hitting side, it's finding streamers, finding opportunities where teams have, you know, 8-game weeks where I could, you know, pick up a few additional plate appearances for that week. And I'm just trying to catch up in basically homers, RBI and steals. Is where I'm lacking. So, but every other category, I'm tracking pretty close to the 80th percentile. I am a little bit short on saves, but we'll see what happens in the second half and who's available.
If only you knew a guy. If only you knew a guy that could get you a front lined into some potential saves. I'm just saying.
I'm relying on that knowledge, but again, like I go back to Fab, and it's these guys are all smart too.
They're sharp.
Like,
they're all sharp, man. It's crazy. Yeah. That's why I love doing this show every Monday or Tuesday, just to go back and look at the names that were added, because like I spend time on Fab. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I do a lot of work. And there's even some names I didn't even think about like putting out there for bids. So it's like you said, you got to go deep. It's wild, and it's different from week to week. But like you're very competitive main event leagues. You'll have a lot of moves, like you said, like 30 moves or so. The 12s that I'm in are just goofy. Like there's no rhyme or reason half the time. Sometimes there's a handful of bids, but there's like barely any bids. Some guys go uncontested that were like $200 in another league. It's just it's the wild west over there in the 12 teamers, but. The 15s are different, that's for sure. So where do you stand right now as we head into the halfway point of the season?
Yeah, so over the past 6 weeks, I headed up to second place in my league and 82nd overall because I finally had a breakout week hitting where I had, 14 homers, almost 50 RBI, things like that. But kind of fell back. I really had a terrible week hitting last week. Led the lead or was tied for the league lead in at bats for the week, but I only scored like 20 some runs, only a few homers. It was just bad. So right now I'm sitting in fourth in my league, 173rd overall, and I have $197 in FAB remaining. So, we'll see where that goes. Hopefully that's enough to, acquire some, a few more players that can help, but yeah,
you will. Like one thing I've noticed, I know a lot of people talk about it. How is it in your league? Do you see, because everyone's shorter on money, I guess just common sense this far into the season. Are you noticing also that like the bid amounts are getting less and less? Is that like, so I know it's what it should be, but is there still guys with heavy hitters out there in your league? Basically is what I'm saying.
I haven't been really tracking everyone else's for a few weeks there. I actually had the most FAB. But then I went heavy and Pascatino because I need power and RBI. So, but yeah, I would say let's see. This past week, the highest bid was $79. Okay. Mark Melanson was available. I was in the bidding on him, but didn't get him. Chris Liss actually got him. Gotcha. But second highest bid was $41. So yeah, it's definitely starting to come down a little bit. I was in like the 20s, mid teens for the couple players I picked up, but. Yeah, it's starting to come down a little bit.
Yeah, and that's I wanted to bring it up at least for the listeners because I know in 12s for sure it's I'm getting guys for like $10, $7, $13 because it's going down quite a bit in some of these leagues. And 12s are definitely different than 15s. Like Mark Melanson would never go for anything close to $79 in a 12 team league, but in a 15 that's like super valuable, like really really valuable even though it's Mark Melanson. So definitely some appeal there as well.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWireSports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWireSports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWireSports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWireSports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't have to give away everything in case, someone's listening to the show. But what's kind of your plan of attack? What do you said you need to get the three hitting categories. That's your focus for now. Are you just going to keep clogging, like trying to attack those extra at bats each week, or do you have a game plan in play?
Yeah, pretty much. I have the most pitching points in my league with 60, but I'm just lacking on the hitting side. I need to attack saves in the second half, try to see who becomes available at the trade deadline, see if I can forecast some plug and play guys, but roster space is pretty limited. Yeah, it's been kind of a, there's been a couple of weeks where I'm just like, man, I don't really want to drop this guy. Robbie Grossman was one where I was like, man, you know, Robbie Grossman, I want, you know, he had that 2020 season last year. I finally dropped him last week because I was just like, he's hasn't done anything. So, yeah. But it's, you know, guys like that where I'm just like kind of holding on for too long. So I'm gonna have to figure out who from my roster I can drop, you know, in the next couple of weeks, because it's a pretty critical period coming up.
And that's the hardest thing. I've said it time and time again, because I dropped Robbie. I dropped Marcus Stroman a couple weeks ago. That might backfire. But again, I'm a 12. And so, like, I have to always clarify that to the listeners, it's different than a 15. You never would drop Marcus Stroman. But it's just, it's hard trying to figure out, especially in a 15 where the replacement value is so empty on what you're going to put together there, unless you're going and, oh, Vinny Pascantino's coming up, let's go drop so-and-so. Okay, that's different, because I know I'm going to play Vinny pretty much every time he's out there. That makes a lot of sense. Before we get into the Week 15 Fab recap, you did mention Vinny Pascantino, and we talked about him on last week's show, and I know Rob DiPietro, big, big Italian breakfast fan. What is it you're hoping to get out of him besides just like a million home runs? Are you expecting him to hit 20 home runs? What were your expectations going into adding and spending all that fab money on Vinny?
You know, hoping for double digit home runs. I think when I was listening to you and Toby last week, he's projected for like 10 homers or so rest of season. Hoping for a little bit more than that, but, you know, hitting fourth, third in the KC lineup, you know, a lot of RBI opportunities there. So I'm just hoping for something. And he feels like the guy who can make the most impact there. And who knows if somebody else will come up and have that type of impact. So I went $301 on him. It was the fifth highest bid in the main event last week. I think the highest was like 373. So yeah, I was right up there because I wanted to make sure I got him.
Cool. No, that's the way you go get your guy. And he was a game. He is potentially a game changer. Like you said, the biggest thing is there aren't a ton of other prospects that look like they're going to get called up that are going to make that kind of impact that he can make. But to kick off our Week 15 Fab, we do have one that just came up here recently, and that is Nolan Jones of the Cleveland Guardians. He did go 0-3 in game one of the doubleheader on Tuesday to snap his four-game hit streak since he got called up. But he, like I said, he hit safely in all four of his first games, multiple hits in three games, three extra base hits. He's walking a ton. It looks like the real deal for now. What's your thoughts on Nolan Jones? Because I was nowhere close to getting him in my leagues. People were very excited about him, and so far, for good reason.
Yeah, 14% walk rate throughout his minors career. So he's always been able to get on base. It's just been the contact rate. It's been pretty low, below 70% in the minors. You know, and he was a top 75 prospect for several years. Seems like he was Cleveland's top prospect for a long time. And then earlier this year, he fell to like the mid 250s in James Anderson's top 400 prospect list for RotoWire. You know, and it's because, you know, the first few years in the upper minors weren't great. But, you know, seems like something clicked for Jones this year. He was hitting well for AAA Columbus. Now it seems like he'll pretty much be the starter in right field for the Guardians. You know, in a full season, I would think he could probably hit about 20 home runs with a couple steals, but wouldn't really expect too much on the base paths. And Bernie Pleskov, who's a columnist for RotoWire, he follows the Guardians closely. He actually had a recent thread on Jones. Saw him in the Arizona Fall League, didn't really like what he saw, but, you know, appears to be coming around on him and could be a decent fantasy asset moving forward.
Yeah, it's always the popular term, prospect growth is not linear. So maybe it just took something to click, like you said, to make it work. And it could just be a hot stretch. We've seen so many guys come up and hit for like a week, and then all of a sudden the scouts see, oh, he can't hit a slider low and in. Let's see what he can do. And we're just going to throw it over and over again until he can hit it. And that's where it gets fun. So it's all about making adjustments and see where Jones can go. But Cleveland, in theory, has no reason not to play him for a while. So we'll see how that goes and see what they got out of him. So it'd be fun to see. But he was adding 122 12-team NFBC online leagues, as high as 128, as low as $1. I love the $1 everywhere. Mm-hmm. But as high as 128. So I think a lot of the things I saw, like when I saw like Jenstead and some other guys, or Striker, sorry, and other guys talking on Twitter I saw a lot of like between 40 and 80s, it felt like people were discussing. So it's kind of in that range. And that's for 15s and 12s. So a lot of $40 to $80 bids, it felt like, for Jones, which again could be a sign of the time of the season where people don't have all the money to just break the bank and you can see where things can go.
Yep. Yeah. And I think about, like, you know, high pedigree prospects like, you know, Michael Harris was, you know, talked about. And I'm looking like back at my, you know, week 8 fab bidding, like, well, damn, I missed out on him. And now I'm kind of thinking about that for Jones. Like, you know, no, he wasn't like a highly touted prospect coming into the year, but, you know, did I just miss out on someone who could potentially give me double digit home runs the rest of the way? Yeah, it's interesting. These prospects are tough. They can either, you know, make or break your season.
Yeah, and I'm usually very timid on prospects. I thought Harris would just be up for like a couple of weeks. I wasn't even aggressive on him at all. That one hurts because I've written him about like a riser or a faller like so many times of late. Dude just every week produces between power and speed, and he still gets ninth and puts up great numbers, which is annoying. I got some Pascantino and Derek Hall in last week, so I got that, but it's like you said, was Jones maybe better than a Derek Hall pick? We'll see. Derek Hall had a big week, but we'll see how that goes. So prospects are very, very tricky. We've seen them go hot and cold very quickly. So right. It's always something to kind of hold your breath, enjoy it while you can, and probably be ready to pull the pin quickly if you need to. The Texas Rangers might have a new closer in town. It's a good thing we have a relief pitching expert to talk here. Brett Martin of the Texas Rangers was added in 107 leagues, as high as $61. He picked up 3 saves in his last 3 outings. Been very effective. He's just been really good out of the bullpen. He has not allowed a run since an appearance on May 29th, which has been pretty darn impressive. What's your thoughts on this Brett Martin addition? Is it his to keep, or is Barlow going to get it back?
Well, it's not like Barlow has been terrible this season. He blew a couple saves in a row. He's blown 4 in the season and 17 chances. So I think it's just, you know, let's pull him out of high leverage for now. Let's go to a committee. Or at least that's what Chris Woodward said. You know, he listed Martin and Matt Moore, Dennis Santana as possible closing options. But yeah, it's been Martin who's been the lead guy thus far. Santana's been his setup man in the 8th inning. Like you said, he hasn't given up a run in a while. But other than that, I mean, he hasn't really been super impressive. He has a career 23% strikeout rate, walk rate near 9%, 24 to 10 K to walk in 28 innings this year. But, you know, on the plus side, high ground ball rate over 50%, only 1 home run allowed. So, you know, it's a sensible option to give a shot in the 9th inning. You know, first save, he's coming on against like the top of the order. Minnesota was against 3, 4, 5 hitters for the first save. Next one, Minnesota's 1, 2, 3 hitters. And the third was Oakland's 2, 3, 4 hitters. So, yeah, it seems like they'll probably keep him in that role for now that he's been doing well. And like you said, he hasn't given up a run in a while. So, see how far he can take it. But, you know, I did drop Barlow in one of my 12s, but, you know, I look at him like I look at Corey Knebel in Philadelphia. I think eventually he'll come back to the 9th inning fold and be part of the saves mix, if not the primary closer.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. How aggressive would you be on Martin if he's available in any one of your formats right now? If he's out there, even though you do think eventually they'll kind of move things around and whatnot, just for the time being, say he gets 2 more weeks as the closer. Like, how valuable is that to you right now?
I wouldn't be spending too much on Martin because I don't know. It's a weird – Texas is in kind of a weird spot, right? They're 3.5 games out of the AL card, 4 games under 500. So they're kind of competitive. But the next couple of weeks are really going to say a lot of what they do, you know, at the trade deadline. Like, are they going to go for it? Are they going to acquire some talent? Are they going to – sell off pieces if they have a losing week this week and the next week, you know what I mean? So there's so many questions over the next week that it's hard to say, like, you know, Martin's going to have that role for a long time. Cause like I said, Barlow hasn't been awful this season. He has a whip under 1. So I wouldn't be like breaking the bank if you need saves, but you know, he's worth, you know, a semi reasonable bid Like, I'd probably, if Bucks fab, I would probably be bidding in like the 10, 15 range if I, you know, needed saves.
Perfect. Perfect. The next up on the list here is Reed Detmers, added in 102 leagues, as high as 132. He was a big, big winner this week. Came back from the minor leagues, 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 7 Ks. The slider, which he started showcasing with improvements in the minors, looked great against Baltimore. Strikeouts, have, like even before he got sent down, his previous two starts, forgot sent down, strikeouts were there. He's given up a ton of long balls. Walks were an issue for Reed. Maybe this improved sliders the ticket. A lot of people were getting back in on Reed Detmers this week. What are your thoughts on what we saw from that start, and how optimistic are you that this continues on, that he's worth adding in a bunch of leagues?
Yeah, I actually had Detmers. I drafted Detmers in the main event and held on him for a long time, but I never started him. And actually dropped him right before he got sent down. But he had that no-hitter versus the Rays earlier this season, but he wasn't going over 5 innings pitched often. So it's like, you know, he's not getting chances at wins. Like, you know, his whip's pretty good, but, you know, he's given up some runs. So, I don't know. He, you know, once he got sent down, he dominated that one start in the minors, 14 Ks over 6 innings. And then he was impressive in that first start back in the majors against Baltimore, throwing 6 scoreless with 7 strikeouts. But you mentioned the slider, like that was his primary pitch in that game against Baltimore. It was up almost 3 miles per hour. And he had been throwing a slider about 19% of the time, but he threw it 40% of the time in that game against the Orioles. It'll be interesting to see if he made pitch mix change forward. And, you know, certainly worth a speculation, but again, you know, Angels are like to go 6-man rotation. You know, how often is he going to go over 6 innings? You know, it's just a lot of question marks. So there's upside, but it's like, I'm kind of like tepid with it too. There's some drawbacks as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think out of like my 8 or so fab leagues, I think I have him and I picked him up in one league and he was like my 4th or 5th option. He wasn't one of my top targets because two of the big things, the innings is always a concern with me with Detmers, like you said, and that's how it is with a bunch of other pitchers. If I'm looking to accumulate stats, I need those innings, and that makes it tricky. More importantly, worse than the innings, is that 6-man rotation. That's just a big stinger because it's going to, again, also limit his overall upside. And when we're talking about getting 2 starters here and there, well, it's almost impossible. Like, he'll get one occasionally, potentially, but it's not going to happen very often in a rotation like that. So we'll have to kind of wait and see how it plays out. Injuries could happen, which could change things. But I'm a little optimistic in what we saw from him, but it was one start. So let's see what he can put together some more. Because even that no-hitter was not dominant by any means. He had, like, what, 2-3 strikeouts or something? So he was very efficient in that start. So let's see how things go moving forward. 100% with you on that one. Aaron Hicks added in 92 leagues, as high as $52. I like Aaron Hicks a lot. I don't think I like him for $52, but I like him a lot. Had a big week last week, 3 home runs, drove in a ton of runs, stealing bases. Now has 6 homers and 9 steals on the year. Average is still something to be desired, but a lot of that was due to his early struggles this season. Hitting in a very good Yankees lineup does not stink either. So I've always been an Aaron Hicks truther. I get it. He's very streaky and can be very frustrating. So this is a guy to roll with when he's hot, drop him when he's not. Probably better for 15s and 12s. But what's your thoughts on Aaron Hicks?
That was your boy in draft season.
I have a ton of DC shares. Every draft. Yep. I have a ton of NFBC and DC shares. So I've been rostering him in a lot of places right now.
Yeah, now's the time to start him. Because hitting 385 by 3 homers, has 2 steals this month, more walks and strikeouts this month. So he's actually better for OBP formats because he is, you know, he does have that ability to draw a walk. But like you said, Yankees lineup hitting 6 or 7 for the Yankees. Looks like he's going to set a career high in stolen bases this season. Already has 9. Isn't giving us too much pop. You know, he hit those 27 homers back in 2018, but otherwise hasn't hit more than 15 this season. So expect too much pop. But like you said, ride the hot streak while you can. And then as soon as he starts getting cold, time to drop him.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy when you're doing fab bids throughout the week. I know it makes sense because there's more options in baseball at the position, but the outfield position, at least in recent weeks, has been rather deep. Like, you can make a handful of options, your Hickses, your Tyrone Taylors, even Jack Sawinski's. There's a bunch of like guys that you can throw out there to try to ride hot hands. Even Matt Carpenter has outfield eligibility if you want to get frisky with it. So there's a lot of interesting scenarios out there. Ride them, drop them, ride them, drop them. And that leads us to another guy here, Eddie Rosario, added in 82 leagues, as high as 63, as low as a dollar. He returned from the IL recently, had an eye injury. And since he returned on July 4th, he's been pretty productive, playing nearly every day with Adam Duvall on the paternity leave, but only hitting 192. But he's got hits in four games, got a home run, probably knocking the rust off would be my guess. But we've seen this from Eddie R before. Are you investing in Eddie Rosario, or do you want to see more first before you get excited?
No, excuse me. I'd like to see how the playing time shakes out in the outfield there in Atlanta, because you assume like Acuna and Michael Harris will be playing most days in right and center. And then, you know, is Rosario going to be in a platoon with the ball left, with Rosario getting most of the starts versus right-handers? I don't know. That's going to be a tough. The funny thing is he has actually a higher career average versus lefties than he does righties. But he only has a 699 OPS versus lefties versus 800 OPS versus righties. So fortunately for Rosario, AL East is a good division for right-handed starting pitchers. Mets, Phillies, Nationals, all have four righty starting rotation. Marlins only with Alcantara and Lopez, currently. You know, something to think about if, you know, the Braves are going to be playing the Marlins anytime, you know, Rosario might see the bench a little bit more against them. But, you know, in that division, a lot of righties, I would say he probably gets majority of the time over Duvall. And who knows what they do at the trade deadline, because, you know, now they're right there with the Mets, AL East. So, you know, maybe they deal from their surplus in the outfield. You know, maybe they don't. They just dealt Drew Waters to the Royals. I know he was a big prospect for them. I don't know. I wasn't super interested in Rosario. He was pretty far down on my conditional bid list.
Yeah, I didn't have a ton of interest in him. Biggest thing for me is playing time, like you said. It's crazy to think Harris has a locked-in role, but he's earned it, so he's got that. You got Acuna. Ozuna is going to play DH most of the time, but he could still play the outfield. This is why I was concerned with the Duvalls of the world in the draft season, was because of the playing time. But it'll be interesting, because I don't know if they will trade from their embarrassment of riches, because this was last year when they traded for Rosario, Duvall, and Jorge Soler. In the same, we're all sitting there going, what in the world? And it worked. They needed all those guys. They all had humongous roles to win a World Series. So yeah. Who knows? Like, for fantasy worlds, yes, please trade one of these players. In real life baseball, they probably won't. That's the crazy part. But yeah. And that's what makes it harder to add Rosario, as you mentioned. So I guess keep an eye on it, see what happens. Duvall can slump with the best of them. And like you said, with more and more managers and at least front offices getting wise to advanced stats and just looking at splits and stuff, Rosario, like you said, has always hit lefties better, always. So maybe there's something to that as well. I'll have to kind of wait and see if they kind of make that adjustment or not.
Yeah, fourth or fifth outfielder. I mean, like you said, he has a pretty low batting average now, but we know he's better than that. Like, you know, and hopefully now he can see the ball when he's at the plate.
Exactly. So. He's got power and he's got speed, so he can help you. Like, he's a lot like Aaron Hicks, honestly. Just see which one's healthy and roll with it and go that direction. Next up on the docket here, we got Eric Haas, added in 71 leagues, as high as $28, catcher for the Detroit Tigers. Also has outfield eligibility, if you're feeling it, but he's catching a lot these days with Tucker Barnhart doing nothing at the plate. And he's hitting .243 with seven homers. We saw Haas hit 22 home runs last year when he had the chance to play. So this is the catcher's position has given us potential guys to add almost all season long, which has been fun. And Haas is a good one. I rostered him a ton last year. Don't have any shares right now, but I have no problem if people want to roster. I think he's a very, very valuable, potentially valuable offensive catcher. What's your thoughts on Haas?
Yeah, it's a good week to pick him up. Tigers had, you know, an eight-game week. Typically starts against left-handed pitchers. Should see pretty much every start against lefties. But recently starting to see a little bit more starts against righties too. Like you said, Tucker Barnhart has done absolutely nothing offensively. Like, literally. Like, nothing. So if you look at last year, Haas was really hot in June and July. He had 16 homers between those 2 months before he cooled off in August and September. So this might be the just time of year he heats up. He's hitting .391 in July with a couple homers this year. So, you know, maybe not a, you know, end of rest of season catcher too, but, you know, while certainly probably a better option than, you know, the Nomar Narvaez's of the world and people who just kind of give you a little bit offensively, but are kind of lacking in the power run production category. So, should be in the lineup tonight. Detroit plays
Daniel Lynch.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I like Haas as a catcher too. Wish I would have looked into him more prior to Fab last week, 'cause I would have picked him up.
I'm with you too. I didn't think he was playing this much either. And this is one of those misses when you have little ones running around that you don't catch everything. And Eric Haas is, I wasn't focused on the catcher's position as much as I probably should have been. But yeah, that was a big one. It was also, I actually did have a couple bids in, but I usually just put like four catchers for a dollar and see who I get. And he went for like $4 in my league. So I lost out. Maybe should have been more aggressive on him. But in that league, I want to ask you this. I dropped Christian Betancourt. Again, 12-teamer, different. But he got traded to Tampa Bay, which we all know how that story usually ends. It's platoon time for Christian, who the hard hit metrics are insane, but the overall production's kind of been lacking. So some may say unlucky, some may say who knows. So what's your thoughts on a guy that a lot of us were adding for a while there, and now he gets traded to Tampa Bay and Betancourt? Are you cutting ties with him as well?
Betancourt?
Yes.
Am I cutting ties? No, I would hold on to actually have Betancourt rostered on, I think, a couple OCs. He's hitting third for the Rays today. So, good. I mean, if he sticks in the middle of that lineup, I really like that.
That's a plus.
You know, especially with, you know, Wander Franco being out, Zunino's out, Francisco Mejia's out. So playing time should be there. I think I'd prefer Betancourt over Haas. It's probably pretty close, to be honest. I mean, rest of the season, they'll probably give us pretty similar stats. But context is a little better for Betancourt right now, especially if he hits in the middle of the Rays lineup.
I like it. Let's stick in that Rays lineup. You mentioned this name earlier, Harold Ramirez. When you drafted him, he was playing for Cleveland. He has been traded to Tampa Bay. And one thing with Harold, even last year when he was in Cleveland before he got hurt, contact skills are usually always very good. Hits the ball very hard. Just doesn't hit for a lot of power. Thus, the same thing you were seeing in Tampa Bay. Since June 1st, he's hitting .396 with 2 home runs, 2 stolen bases. He also got caught twice, so he's tried 4 steals, which is, to me, kind of a plus. 151 ISO, 188 WRC plus since June 1st. Dude's been mashing, absolutely mashing, and he's hitting in the middle of that Rays order, second, third, fourth, pretty much every single game, and he's not platooning, which I wrote in an article recently. I said that's the biggest thing is not only is he hitting every day, he's not platooning, which is a big plus in Tampa Bay, which I like going into the season, Ryan, it was like Wander Franco and who? It's like you were trying to like do math on who wouldn't platoon on this team. Harold Ramirez obviously wasn't on the team, but wouldn't have been towards the top of my list. So what are you doing with Harold? Like, he was a popular ad this week. I should actually say the actual information here. He was added in 67 leagues for as high as $41. So what's your thoughts on Mr. Ramirez?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he's crushing it over the past, you know, month and a half. I mean, he's playing it. Big thing now is he's playing every day. Hitting .330, he's hitting both lefties and righties really well. You mentioned the high contact rate, 85%, barely strikes out. You know, BABIP is a little high, .371. So, you know, average might come down a bit, but if he's sitting second in the Rays lineup, I mean, that's a, you know, great spot to be. So, you know, when it comes to RBIs, you know, like you said, no power, but, you know, run production runs should be, he's playing every day and hit the top of the Rays lineup.
Yeah, most definitely. He was like pretty much a 15 team only guy for a while. He's definitely 12 team viable now. So keep that on your radar and see what you can put together for sure. All right, let's talk about him. The guy I said earlier, I dropped in a handful of leagues recently. He's back. That is one Marcus Stroman. And I am always been team Marcus Stroman. I'm a huge Marcus Stroman fan. I'm terrified from what I've seen this year. And in a 12 team league, I couldn't have the dead roster spot. So I dropped him. He made his return on July 9th, 3 days ago, 4 innings, 2 hits, no earned, 1 walk, 3 Ks. Even his rehab starts were a little sketchy, though. Got hit around a little bit. So it's just been a rough go for Stroman this season before he even got injured. What are your thoughts on Stroh, who was added in 58 leagues as high as $55?
It's a good question because, I mean, as just a baseball player, I just love watching him pitch.
Yeah, he's the man.
Passion, you he's know, awesome. Certainly a gamer. But might not be an asset in wins, but you know, if you look at his stats in May before he got hurt, he did spend some time on the COVID list earlier this month, this year too, before he missed time with shoulder inflammation. But he had a 1.50 ERA and 0.79 WHIP across 24 innings in May. So I mean, somebody could give you ratio help. But again, like, is he going to be on the Cubs? Are they going to sell pieces? He's not signed long-term in Chicago. So I wonder if he becomes a trade candidate. I mean, I saw someone on Twitter suggest, you know, Stroman back to the Jays. That'd be a great spot to be.
They could use him big time. That's for sure.
But, yeah, I like Stroman too. Like he's, you know, he's not like the super big, strikeout asset, but really could help you improve your ratios, you know, as long as he's, you know, obviously he's going to be building back up. You know, he only pitched maxed out at 59 pitches in his first start back. So look for him to go a little bit longer in games and then see what the Cubs do with him and see if he sticks with it or gets traded.
He would be a good trade chip, like you said. It's a good point. He could definitely bring back a return for the Cubs. Yeah, it just hurt. He's one of those, we talk about it all the time, is there's certain guys you just have like biases of because you like him so much. Like I got him as a value last year. He was awesome. Drafted him in spots this year. It's like, I can't drop him. I can't drop him. How good he can be. Then you just drop him. Now he comes back and he's probably going to make me pay for it. So it'll be a lot of fun, but those are the breaks on the game we play.
Actually just looking at his contract now, $25 million for next year and then a $21 million player option 2024. So he will be pretty easy if he does get moved. So keep that in mind.
Toronto, Boston, even the Yankees are always in play. Dodgers are needing some pitching right now.
Yeah, Dodgers. Yeah, especially.
Stroh would love LA for his clothing brand and everything. Oh, yeah. Like there's some options to be played here, folks. So this could get real dicey real quick. What would make it even better to stab me in the heart is him going to the Dodgers and doing it. That right. Would just be the ultimate, like, yep, okay, thank you.
Right.
All right. You mentioned Corey Knebel earlier, and I like that you mentioned him and that you're kind of seeing what I'm seeing. Obviously, you pay way more attention to the relievers here. He's added in 57 leagues, as high as $51. He has made 2, 4, 6, 8 straight appearances without allowing a run, picked up a save in his most recent appearance. I play in the Tout Wars that has saves and holds, and I added him about 3 weeks ago when I started seeing some little improvements here, going, okay, he's at least pitching high leverage. He can get me holds with potentially going back to the closer's role and see what we can do here. He's looked much better. So what have you seen that you already mentioned? When we talked earlier about the Texas situation with Barlow, you mentioned Knebel in that statement that you could see him getting back into the role. So what are you seeing that obviously others saw when they added him this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, when they removed him from the closer role, they kind of said for now, you know, when they did that. And, you know, he has been much better since being demoted to kind of lower leverage. 1.80 ERA, 0.90 WHIP over 10 innings. But big thing with him right now is walks are still a bit of an issue, even though he hasn't been giving up as many runs. He's got a career worst 14.5% walk rate. So that's the kind of only piece I'm worried about. You did mention he logged the Phillies' most recent save on Saturday, but it's important to note that Sir Anthony Dominguez's right hand weren't available that day after working 2 straight days prior to that game. So I still think it's Philadelphia as a committee, unless Knebel gets the next save chance when both Dominguez and hand are available. And if so, then he's probably the guy again. Regardless, I do still think he's in the mix for saves. It's just how, you know, does he eventually claim role for himself eventually? And I think, you know, he's a veteran. I think he's, you know, certainly capable of doing so. But again, you know, the trade deadline's coming up. Philadelphia bullpen has been a mess for years. You know, it's finally getting a little bit better this year. But, you know, who knows what the Phillies are going to do? They're right in the thick of the NL wild card. So, you know, maybe they add someone that's a little bit more reliable in the back end, and they kind of use Knebel kind of as a setup guy. So, like, I'm like half optimistic that he gets the roll back, but like the trade deadline kind of gives me some like worry. It's a little, yeah, Knebel's interesting. I did have him in my conditional list this weekend. You know, I didn't get him, but I do think it's worth spending a couple bucks to find out like if he gets the job back again. I mean, I think, you know, a $6 bid, you know, won't hurt. And if he's not getting saves over the next couple of weeks, you can just drop him again.
Yeah, 100% agree. And that's one thing like I or Toby and I even talk about when we basically talk about closers that get added each week, because some go for crazy amounts of money, some don't, and it gets wild. But it's like, I'd rather not break the bank on a speculative closer. I'd rather go speculate a couple bucks on Knebel, or like if Barlow got dropped or something like that. A guy, I'd rather speculate on a guy that's done it and might get his job back than
exactly
the potential like seventh inning guy that's, oh, there's rumors he might find his way to the ninth type situation. So I think that's a great point you made. It's like, go put a couple bucks, like go put 4 or 5 bucks on Corey and see what happens, instead of going and spending like 75 bucks hoping Barlow doesn't get his job back.
Exactly.
It just changes things in a big way. So something to think
about. If you have the roster space, it makes sense to do something like that. And if you need saves, like speculate for cheap, you know, and continue to, you know, use that roster spot, you know, turn and burn. See, you know, who sticks.
I completely agree. I'm going to jump around to some different players on the list here to get your opinions on them. And I want to stick with bullpen situations. So I'm going to go to Atlanta, and I believe Kenley Jansen is supposed to be back on Tuesday. Like after we record, he should be coming back, but AJ Minter was added in 51 leagues for as high as $52. I know the bullpen's kind of been a back and forth thing. Minter's been awesome all season, and he's picked up 3 saves since helping fill in for Kenley. So people were still looking to add him for saves. How do you see this bullpen in Atlanta playing out? Because I'd imagine it's Kenley's when he comes back, but are they going to kind of be careful with him? I don't know what you've heard or what you're speculating on.
Well, David O'Brien, beat writer for the Braves, just posted 9 minutes ago. Kenley is going to be activated tomorrow. So, I think the Minter pickup is just kind of a little ill-timed. You know, there's probably people, you know, thinking, you know, maybe Kenley's absence extends a little bit longer than anticipated, but I think the job is Kenley's when he gets back. He's pitched really well this year. He's dealt with this before. He knows how to manage it by now. So, you know, is he going to be throwing in a row? Probably not. So, you know, look for Will Smith and Minter to kind of mix in when he needs a break. But in a 12-team league, NFBC Online Championship, I'm not sure I'd be rostering Minter, you know, just with Jansen coming back.
That's kind of how I've discussed it the last couple of weeks when Jansen got hurt. I'm like, sadly, it's scary. It's the heart. Yes, don't get me wrong, but he's had this before. He knows how to deal with it. Even the report said this shouldn't be a long-term thing. So, again, wasn't going to break the bank on this potential situation for, you know, you got 3 saves. If 3 saves is worth it, then okay. But, yeah, like the people that this past week that bid on him, hope he gets a save for you on Tuesday night. That's all I'm going to say. Hope he gets that save and makes it worth it.
And that's not to undermine like how great Minter has been. He's been like fantastic. He's been amazing. Especially in leagues that count holds. Like he's among the league's hold leaders. So if you play in a league like that, he's certainly worth rostering. But, you know, in the NFBC Online Championship, you know, you could probably drop him.
Yep. 100% agree. Jonathan Scope is a player I was heavily invested in going into the season. Probably dropped in about half of my leagues, not all of them, thank God, because he's finally figured it out, it appears, at the plate. He's riding a 9-game hitting streak into Tuesday, where he's got no home runs, though, but he has 4 stolen bases over that stretch, hitting nearly 400 and not striking out a lot. So there's positives coming out of this. The power would be great, but he's running, he's hitting for average, the plate discipline looks good. What's your thoughts on Scope? Does this just look like a hot streak to you, or are you like me and you're going to be optimistic and hope he's breaking out?
No, I mean, if you look at his underlying metrics, I mean, it's basically say he's been the same hitter as previous seasons. I mean, ground ball percentage, line drive, fly ball, all in line with recent seasons. The biggest thing is his home run per fly ball is down from 13.5% to 7.5%. BABIP is really low, 249. His expected batting average is 256. So, I mean, probably been a little bit unlucky there. 42% hard hit rates, best of his career. So, I mean, really, this kind of seems like an anomaly with Scope. I really think he would be a valuable contributor rest of the season. Look at the Tigers; they're kind of out of the race right now. I wonder if they decide to trade him, if they can trade him, because he's got a $5 million player option for next season that he's likely to opt into before he becomes a free agent in 2024. I really think he'd be a good fit for the White Sox. I mean, they've been rolling out Lurie Garcia, Josh Harrison at the Keystone. I mean, he'd be a huge upgrade over those guys, in my opinion. But, will the Tigers deal within the division?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Will Scope even establish enough trade value before, the deadline to even be traded? Does he even want to be traded? I'm not worried about Scope. Actually, I have him on several leagues, basically just – waiting for those numbers to kind of turn around.
Yep. You're a smart man. I think even Toby tweeted it out the other day, like, what stands out to you to be different or something? And there's a lot of the stats you mentioned. It's like, he's actually performing better on almost every metric that he ever has. And that's one reason why I touted him in the offseason. I'm like, the dude hits 20 plus home runs every year, steals you a handful of bags, drives in like 70 to 80 runs, and hits for a decent average every year for like 9 straight years or whatever it is. It's just what he does. He's boring, but productive. We might get a good second half out of him, that's for darn sure. So yep. Something to monitor as well. Josh Winder was added in 56 leagues, as high as $34. Got two steps this week, Milwaukee on Tuesday, White Sox on Sunday. I was not as excited as some. I know like Vlad Sedler and others were all in. It's maybe a flaw of mine. I just say it all the time. He just doesn't strike guys out, so he just doesn't do it for me. But were you in on Josh Winder? Because I've been wrong on these guys before. They can be ratio kings and get you a couple wins. So what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I was semi in on Winder. The thing with Winder, like you said, is his strikeout rate isn't overwhelming. But Twins are a good team. He has a chance to give you a boost in wins. It's question mark I have is, will he stick in the rotation? When Bailey Ober comes back, Chris Archer. The Twins should keep him in the rotation. In the 5 games he started out of 9 appearances this season, he's got a 1.71 ERA, 1.10 WHIP, compared to 5.79 ERA, 1.50 WHIP as a reliever. So he's performing much better as a starter. It's probably a mentality thing or something, or maybe it's just some luck. But I was like semi in on him. Didn't get him, but I definitely get why people added him. Two step against two semi-decent, but not like super scary teams. So we'll see how he does tonight against the, I think it's Brewers tonight. Yeah.
Brew Crew tonight, White Sox, a struggling White Sox team on Sunday. So that'll be interesting to see me eat my words on that one as well. Johnny VR, who I've always had a soft spot for in fantasy for his multi-position eligibility. The fact that if he gets to play, which he does, got some pop, got some speed. He wasn't horrible. It was not great by any means with the Cubs. Not going to sugarcoat it. Got DFA'd. The Angels of all teams, of course, picked him up. And now he's leading off for the Halos and added in 53 leagues, as high as $44. He did hit 6th in the last game, but he was leading off every game prior to that. Hits in 3 games so far with Anaheim, even 1 stolen base. Playing third base every day with Rendon, down for quite a while. So what's your thoughts on Johnny VR, who's with regular playing time, like I said, he's proven he can be very, very fantasy relevant.
Yeah, I think people are kind of relying on that. I'm going to disagree and say he has been really horrible this year.
Defensively, especially. Defensively, he's really
bad. Yeah. Only a 2.3% barrel rate, negative launch angle this year. StatCast page just ugly. He's one of the worst hitters in baseball by a lot of the metrics that they measure. Even his sprint speed is only the 40th percentile. So I am not in Villar would not be surprised if he's DFA'd by the Angels very soon. So and it's funny too, because I picked them up in one of my leagues. The position flexibility is appealing. It's
tremendous.
Yeah. His past seasons are give you some hope. And he can be an asset in speed, but it's how often is he going to get on base? And you know, he's hitting just 179 through 28 bats with Los Angeles thus far. So he was leading off, but he was dropped to sixth in the order on Sunday. So yeah, it's not looking promising if he's already being, you know, demoted, because that leadoff spot looked awfully nice.
Yep.
But if he's hitting, you know, in Luis Rengifo, who actually, I'm not disregarding Rengifo at all. He's actually been really good. Yep. Yeah, I'm not optimistic about VR at all.
Yeah, when I talked with Bloomfield about VR last week, we were excited because of the leadoff spot. You're hitting in front of Trout, Notani, and Ward, and Walsh, all these guys that could just pound the ball and bring you in. It does definitely change hitting sixth, and DFA'd would be entertaining. I did not get him anywhere this week, so I wouldn't feel as bad this time around because I already dropped him everywhere I had him this season. But it's just one of those guys, man. If he can get hot and can make things interesting for sure. Star Platinum in the chat has a question about this. Would you rather have VR against the Astros for the first half of this week in an FBC, or Isaiah Kiner-Falefa against the Reds this week? And the Reds are not in Great American Small Park. They're in Yankee Stadium. So Johnny VR or IKF for the first half of this week?
Give me IKF.
I'm leaning that way.
Too. Not good. And I don't know, man. Like, Houston's tough. You know, they've got Garcia, Javier, Framber Valdez going. Cincinnati's Ashcraft, minor starters Castillo. Aren't as scary, although Luis Castillo faces them on Thursday. So, I don't know. I'm just not totally off VR. He was in my conditionals, and of course I ended up with him in one league. But now I'm like, after looking into him further, I was like, I shouldn't have even been.
It goes back to what you were saying earlier in the show with your little blog about your NFBC main event, that you have to go super deep because there's so many ads. The next thing you know, you're like, I didn't plan on getting Johnny VR, but here we are.
here's the thing. You need time to like really kind of go deep. And you know, it's one thing to just put guys in your conditional bids, just off name value and what you know of them from the past. But like, how are they doing now? Like, what's their last 14, last 21 that, you know, Rob DiPietro talks about all the time.
I get so jealous of like Rob and those guys saying they spend like 1 to 2 hours on each team. I'm like, how do you have that much time? Like, and I get it. That's why they're so good. That's why they're good. You have the time to do that. There's a big difference. But I'm jealous of that kind of situation. I just don't have that kind of time. That would be amazing.
Over the last week, IKF's hitting 364 with a steal, 5 runs, a couple RBIs. So he's definitely in better form than VR.
100%. Two players that were added in 45 leagues are Andrew Heaney in 47, Freddie Peralta in 45. Heaney as high as 40. Peralta as high as $160. I saw Vlad Sedler was in on Freddie Peralta. These guys are going to be coming back from the IL here after the All-Star break. I thought Freddie was still a little ways away. Must be wrong. Were you in on any speculative bids on these guys that would be returning from the IL?
I wasn't on Heaney, although I probably should have been. He's, you know, his first three starts of the year were quite good. And, you know, there was a lot of talk during draft season that, you know, he might be this Robbie Ray, right? Team context certainly helps being on the Dodgers. So, and they need the starting pitching right now. So, you know, Heaney is kind of what I consider maybe a missed opportunity. Peralta, I was in on multiple times this year. He was available in a couple of my leagues and I didn't bid enough either time, tracking towards an early August return. With a rehab assignment looking like after the All-Star break. So it looks like, you know, Freddie P could be back quite soon. I'm bummed that I missed out.
Yeah, me too. I'm gonna have to put whatever, or if he's still available anywhere, I'm gonna have to get aggressive with him this weekend. Cause I had him in a lot of leagues and I think I dropped him pretty much everywhere. Cause I thought the timetable to return was gonna be a lot longer. Early reports seemed a lot longer for Freddie. And that was just not going to be sustainable for what I needed. So we'll see. A couple others just I want to throw out there. You can give some quick answers if you want. Matt Carpenter was added in 42 leagues as high as $90. He does have like 10 home runs, which is nice, but it's Matt Carpenter. Are you believing enough to want to invest in Matt Carpenter right now?
Not really, but I mean, like you said, 10 homers in 26 games is pretty good. I mean, it's hard to overlook that. One of my co-owners that I manage a an online championship team with mentioned him to me this year, and I just kind of brushed it off, and then was like, yeah, maybe I should have should have bid on him a little bit more. You know, multi-hit games, three straight, a couple homers. Yeah, I mean, he was a pretty good fantasy asset, you know, back in the day. I mean, looking at, you know, 2015 through 2018, I mean, 2018 at 36 homers, 81 RBIs, 111 runs for St. Louis. So, you know, not sure he gets back to that level, but if he already has 10 homers in 26 games, you know, being on the Yankees, who's not getting many contributions from Gallo, Aaron Judge is struggling right now. You know, maybe he'll get a little bit more playing time than I thought.
Plus that short porch and right, I think his first like three or four home runs would not have been a home run in most ballparks. It was pretty entertaining to see. Jake Odorizzi had a big start over the weekend. You got guys like David Peterson, Brian Bello is struggling for the Red Sox, but he's out there. Were there any of these like speculative starting pitchers you were looking into this week? Or were there any other, let's just put it this way, were there any other players that we have not discussed yet that you were in on this week that you were maybe more optimistic on than others?
Not really, because it was a pretty quiet Fab week, I think. I think after Pascantino Mania, it was like pretty tempered this week. And really none of my leagues, like you said, Peralta was somebody I really went hard after a couple times before. Danny Jansen wasn't available in any of my leagues. He's back for the Jays. Steven Matz was somebody I actually added. You never have enough starting pitching in the main event, so he was somebody I picked up for cheap. And a couple weeks ago, that was Nick Lodolo before he got back. So that's pretty much it. Alexis Diaz was somebody I was in on for the Reds. He's been their best reliever by far this season, and you know, could that lead to save opportunities down the road? Possibly. Willing to spend a couple bucks to find out, because even if he's not getting saves, he's been really good.
Yeah, and I see on this fancy chart on RotoWire, he is the closer, technically. Very low security, but he is the closer for the Reds.
I've got him in a committee with Strickland, so a little asterisk means it's a committee, but... could see him. He's my favorite option for saves the rest of the season, because I don't expect Strickland to be very good. So
yeah, I've done the Strickland dance as a Giants fan, so I know where this one goes eventually. He might have some run there, but it'll end in a blaze of glory at some point in time. Before we head on out, I did want to ask you, I have your closers chart up. Is there any sneaky guys that people should, like Alexis Diaz is potentially one? Are there any guys that maybe people should be speculating on now that'll be cheap compared to waiting and spending a ton of money?
Big one is for me right now is Andrés Muñoz of the Mariners.
Love him.
He's just been absolutely dominant past month, like ridiculously good. Since June 13th, 13 and a third innings, 28 strikeouts, 3 walks, no runs, 0.60 whip. And, you know, Mariners are surging. Obviously, they have Paul Sewald, Diego Castillo, both really good. Plenty of ninth inning experience. But, man, Munoz has just been insanely good. Another one I would look out for is Kyle Finnegan. Tanner Rainey's kind of been struggling a little bit. And then Garrett Whitlock was a great reliever last year, coming back from the IL soon. And... you know, Tanner Houck's been really good in the closer role. It seems like he's kind of established himself in that role, but, you know, maybe Whitlock gets a few saves like he did last year. So Whitlock's somebody I actually picked up in the main event this past week.
I like Whitlock a lot. I actually told somebody asked me on Twitter, they're in a deep like 16, 18 team league, and Whitlock was one of like the five guys he mentioned, like, which one would you take? And they said, I'll take Whitlock. And they said, why? And it's exactly what you were saying, that, He could be like the next Sewald, where he goes and gets two innings here and runs into a save, gets some wins, like gets you good ratios, racks up some strikeouts. So he's got a lot of potential in that role, especially as the season goes on. We talk about getting the middle relievers and different things because the pitching just gets so bad. And like you mentioned, adding guys early. Sometimes it's just good to add like a Whitlock to fill in for those weeks where it's like, I really don't want to pitch these guys, but I want to keep them for next week's matchups type scenario. And that's definitely something to have a guy like Whitlock for. In the chat, Star Platinum mentions, check out Nick Martinez getting 3-inning saves. Do you have anything on that that interests you? Because Taylor Rogers, awesome this year, has taken a few steps back of late, but it feels like it's still his gig.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Rogers has been kind of iffy as of late, and that's benefited Nick Martinez, who's got a, I think, 3-inning saves on the season. So, you know, could he be the next man up if Rogers continues to struggle? Sure, but I think they like him kind of in that multi-inning role. And also, Robert Suarez is on his way back from his knee surgery that he had early last month. He recently threw a bullpen and was a closer in Japan last year. So I would think when he's back, he's probably kind of jumps Martinez in that hierarchy in San Diego.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, Ryan, we're going to wrap things up there. As always, it is an absolute pleasure chatting with you on the show and off the show. Great human being over here. Before we take off, remind everybody where they can find you, your work at RotoWire, your poker blog, all the good stuff. So plug away.
Yep, at Ryan Roof on Twitter, R-U-F-E. Find my work at RotoWire, Closer Grid, Closer Encounters, my weekly article focusing on closers. Next week I'll be looking at some closer in waitings who could potentially benefit from change roles with trade deadline coming up. So look out for that. And then, yeah, poker is just a passion of mine. I'm sure many of you your listeners play as well. And my blog is roofbertpoker.blogspot.com. Roofbert was my online screen name back in the day. Nice. So R-U-F-E-B-E-R-T, poker.blogspot.com.
I was wondering where that came from. I wasn't going to ask, but I was wondering. So that explains that one. I love
it. It was my like AOL screen name back in the day.
Yeah, man. That's how you know we're old, is we have AOL. Yeah. You know, there's probably at least half the listeners have like no clue what our
AOL is. What's an away message? What is that?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. It just brings back so many memories right now. I don't even want to go into that. But, yeah, fun times. Fun times as always, my friend. Look forward to doing it again with you sometime.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 488, recapping the week 15 fab and much, much more with our friend Ryan Roof. Catch you guys later.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.